Coming up on Chasing the Natty, we've looked at the players who have changed schools, and now, over the next 2 weeks, we'll be discussing the coaches who have changed their respective locations and how that'll change the 2025 CFF season. Today, we'll be starting with the 10 coaches moving around the Power Four conferences that'll have the most impact on the upcoming season. All that and more coming right after this.
Picks his way to the right and is tripped up, reaching for the end zone. Touchdown. What a start.
Give it to Reed, and there he goes. Nobody's going to catch him. Touchdown.
It's caught. Jeremiah Smith. Touchdown, Ohio State. The legend grows.
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the offseason at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we do here, head on over to campusofcanton.com, subscribe there to any of our phenomenal tiers. We have content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether that's CFF, Devy, C2C, College IDP, College DFS, Underdog Fantasy. Really, if you play it, then we've got content, whether that's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. In fact, now, if you want to support the show even further, you can make sure you do that by making sure when you sign up for one of our yearly membership tiers, you use the promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y, to get 10% off your yearly membership. And again, that is promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y. If you can't do that, you can just show us some love by leaving us a like, a comment, and a subscribe on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, you can leave a 5-star review. Make sure you're following the show. Not only does that show us support, but also the game of college fantasy football in general support. If you have any further questions or just want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me in the show on Twitter. I am at @CFF_Jared, and the show is at @ChasingTheNatty. And across from me is my partner in crime, normally of the Defending the Natty podcast, but today he is stooping down here with us lowly redrafters here today, and that is Mr. Nate Marquise @CFF Nate, no underscore. Nate, take over, man. How you doing today?
Not bad. Ready to slum it up here with CTN. Do some redraft talk. Should be fun. I'll apologize to the listeners ahead of time if you hear me coughing. I've been under the weather, dealing with some kind of respiratory something or other. So I'll try to limit it as best I can. But I'm sure you guys will hear it a few times throughout the next 90 minutes or so.
And I will continue that apology by letting all the listeners know that for some reason I am like extra tongue-tied today. I don't know what is going on with me. Normally, I'm already a little tongue-tied on this show because my mouth speaks faster than my mind can keep up with sometimes. But today, it's extra bad. So if I get tongue-tied a lot today, I apologize to everyone out there. So yeah, with that being said, Nate, we got Power Four coaching changes on board here today. Next week, we'll be discussing the G5 guys and what they're all doing next week. I guess we've discussed coaching changes multiple times over the last couple of years. And I think you've been on this show, this specific mm-hmm. show before in the past. You've done your coaching change articles mm-hmm. in the past. Is there anything you kind of noticed this year that's different compared to last year's or the last couple of years, I would say? My big thing is like, I don't think there wasn't any real massive like domino effect creating coaching change this year. At least not that I can think of off the top of my head. Like, it was mostly pretty quiet for the most part, I'd say.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the head coaching jobs among the P4 and specifically the SEC and the Big Ten, which tends to start the domino effect, a lot of those jobs really didn't open this year. There's a lot of coaches that are going to be kind of on that hot seat for next year. So we could be talking about next year's being just crazy. This year's seemed like it was a lot more of OCs changing roles, you know, or being promoted or moving up to Power Four type jobs or whatever the case may be. Yeah, I think there's more just kind of you'll probably notice on next week's episode more of the G5 changes, and a lot of FCS to G5 head coaching type stuff took place, but not as much with the P4.
But I kind of noticed this year as well is it seems like there's a lot of like reunions kind of going on, right? Like we'll get to like Scott Frost later, obviously, and then I'm thinking of like, Rich
Rashad.
Rodriguez going back to West Virginia, guys like Ryan Grubb going back to Alabama. Like, is
True.
that something potentially we just see more of in the future? Is that just some weird phenomenon that just happens to be happening this year?
I don't know. It's probably just a coincidence that UCF opened and Scott Frost was looking for a job, and same with West excuse me, with West Virginia. So yeah, probably doesn't become a trend, but you never know.
Never know. All right. With that, I'd say we just go ahead and hop right on into it. We got a lot to cover here today with a lot of system soccer, a lot of potential impact to the CFF 25 season. So let's get right on to it. Let's get not him. We'll get to you later. We'll start with the one that I would say has already been, I want to say discussed to death already, because it is March, so there's plenty of time for us to continue to beat this dead horse. But listeners of this show are very familiar with the name of Ben Arbuckle, and they are very familiar with mine and your love of Mr. Ben Arbuckle and the impact that he has had pretty much everywhere that he's gotten to go in college fantasy or just college football in general. The list of great quarterbacks under him just need no introduction, but I'm going to say it anyway. Bailey Zappe, Austin Reed, Cam Ward, Jon Batiire. Really, when's the last time we've had an offensive coordinator, Nate, that's had 4 straight years of a top 10 quarterback?
I don't know. It's a great CFF trivia question.
Like I don't have stats that go back that far. My stats really only go back to 2021, which
Yeah.
ironically is when Arbuckle really arrived onto the scene. So,
I mean,
but
probably Mike Leach,
yeah, you're right.
honestly.
Mike Leach probably would be a probably pretty good guess. Rich Rod probably back in the 2000s, probably I'd say would be close to that given the fact that he always has dual threat quarterbacks. But in addition to his quarterback, the wide receivers have been very consistent under Ben Arbuckle here as well, right? Jarrett Stearns in 2021, Malachi Corley in 2022, Lincoln Victor with if he wasn't hurt, he probably would have finished even higher than he did that year. And then Kyle Williams this past year. Three out of those four were slot receivers. Really, the trend got broken this past year with Kyle Williams playing on the outside, him getting most of the love, finishing top 10 for college fantasy. But regardless, Ben Arbuckle seems to find a way to get one of his receivers into a really good finish. There's a couple of interesting things here, right? Ben Arbuckle, by the way, if I didn't say already, moving from the offensive coordinator position at Wazoo, headed over to Oklahoma. Couple of pros. One, gets Jon Batiire to follow him. That's obviously very nice to have a quarterback that's played in your system before. Two, the best thing about Oklahoma's offense, Deion Burks, is returning. There's very little competition for targets. So, like, what are we thinking, Nate? Like 150 targets for Burks this year? Because who the heck else are they going to throw to?
Let's go 200. Let's push it.
200. I like it. We're going to destroy Nick Nash's tar. What actually is the college football target record for most targets? Because like Nick Nash had to be pushing it last year with 171, right? Like,
What was it? At ECU, was it what was his name? Hardy or something like, I can't remember. There was a wide receiver at ECU that went for like 127 receptions or something like that. He had to have been pushing an insane amount of targets that year.
so
Zay, was it Zay something? I can't remember.
I'm completely blanking on it at this moment. But those are the pros: Jon Batiire, Deion Burks. They are being drafted very highly in drafts already. But then there's the cons, right? Oklahoma's offensive line and the jump for this system from Pac 2 slash Mountain West to the SEC, right? The jump from CUSA to Mountain West slash Pac 12, probably not as big as, jumping now to the SEC. And this offensive line really is concerning to me because I didn't realize this last year, but did you know that Washington State's offensive line last year was number one in the country in pass block rating according to PFF? Like, that was an insanely good offensive line for Wazoo to have, and probably was a very big contributor towards Batiire's success last year. They're now moving to an offensive line here at Oklahoma that it was rated at 62.9. That would have been 92nd in the country last year. So we're talking bottom 40. for college football last year. So, Nate, what do you think about Arbuckle moving to Oklahoma? Obviously, these are your Sooners, so I imagine you want to be optimistic, but is there anything that you think is kind of holding back the potential of Mateer and Arbuckle here?
Well, it obviously can't be worse than last year under Seth Littrell, right? I mean, that was a dumpster fire of all tire fires right there. So, yeah, I mean, this is somebody I think that for CFF purposes, like, is one of our, you know, top five offensive coordinators in the entire country. How that translates to real football and impacts Oklahoma and his ability to design plays and have call plays that with scheme and rhythm that make up for the fact that the offensive line is a weak spot, it remains to be seen, right? And what John Mateer's progress as a quarterback, advancing from, you know, basically playing a Mountain West schedule to now playing arguably the toughest schedule in the country in what Oklahoma has for the SEC, is also remains to be seen. But I mean, it's a situation where, you know, they know each other well, right? He knows what John Mateer is capable of. John Mateer knows this system inside and out. So I think that, you know, top 10 QB for Mateer is definitely within the range of outcomes still. It's possible the defense takes a little bit of a step back, and that could potentially help the offensive side of things, right? If they have to kind of open it up a little bit at times. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it's all going to come down to how well the offensive line performs. But I think, you know, obviously Burks is being there is nice. The early returns, it sounds like, on Giovanni Gibson, what was he from, Arkansas Pine Bluff, I want to say. The early returns on him so far, from what I've heard, with just kind of off-season workouts and stuff like that, is he's been quite impressive. So sounds like maybe he's going to be the featured guy on the outside, you know, to complement Burks, who's definitely going to be the lead wide receiver there. So, you know, if you can get a couple guys going, then I think we're working, you know, with something. It's probably in a void situation with the running backs, don't you think? Arbuckle's never, with Wayshon Parker was solid last year, but I mean, it wasn't enough to make you think that this is going to be a situation where you can draft a running back at Oklahoma and feel confident with just how that line performed and the fact that DeMarco Murray loves a committee. So I'd probably avoid the running backs at all costs.
I think something else I want to point out here, I mentioned the offensive line just a second ago, and I kind of had a quick thought in my head of like, oh, has Arbuckle been relying on great offensive lines during his tenure, both at Wazoo and then Western Kentucky and everything? Didn't have to go far back into 2023 when Washington State's offensive line was 74th in the country in pass block, right? So that's not like he's, that was in the Pac-12. But, you know, it's shown that he can work without an offensive line that, you know, or he doesn't have to rely upon a great offensive line to get this system going here. So that tells me that, one, he can work without a great one. Two, he's shown with this, between 2023 and 2024, he can improve an offensive line. Like, an offensive coordinator isn't just there to, like, draw up route trees for, you know, the receivers and the quarterback and everything like that. They run the whole offense. That includes offensive line. So if he can apply what he did at Wazoo to Oklahoma, fingers crossed for all Sooners fans out there, hopefully we see a much improved offensive line for Oklahoma this next year.
Yeah, and while it's not apples to apples, I think it's a good indicator that with each stop that he's been to so far, from Houston Baptist to Western Kentucky, and then from Western Kentucky to Washington State, it didn't take him 2 or 3 years to ramp things up and get going, right? They hit the ground running at Western Kentucky, obviously, because a lot of transfers followed and knew the system. And then he hit the ground running at Washington State. And, you know, so you hope that same type of situation transpires here in Norman, and the fact that the quarterback is coming with him is usually and the quarterback coach, I don't think that goes without saying too, he's very highly sought of, very highly thought of QB coach, and he's also coming here with Mateer. So I think that's that level of Stability is good whenever you're having to make that big jump to the SEC.
Alrighty, I see. We go ahead and move on to our next guy here. Let's go talk about Scott Frost, who is coming to UCF by way of being a Rams offensive analyst this past year. But obviously, before that, we all remember his, shall we say, inconsistent. I won't even say inconsistent. It was a bad tenure at Nebraska, but
Inconsistency is very nice.
CFF wise, it was inconsistent because there were a couple of. There were a couple of solid pieces here, right? Like throughout his tenure at Nebraska, it wasn't like a complete dud. Like I was going into this research thinking, like, I can't remember anybody that was great at Nebraska under Scott Frost. Well, Adrian Martinez was CFF relevant in 2021, right? He was a top 24 quarterback. I think that personally had more to do with Martinez's skill set than Frost's system or anything like that. But we'll get to the guy that also might have made that possible later. Frost also had a couple of 1,000-yard backs during his time at Nebraska. Only one of them had 200-plus carries, and that was, gosh, who was that? The final year. I'm blanking on his name now. He
I
wasn't
can't
very good.
remember.
Anthony Grant. Anthony Grant had 200-plus carries his final year. But again, that's not something that's very common for Frost. When it comes to wide receivers, he only had two in his 5 years at Nebraska, top 100 targets. That was Stanley Morgan in 2018 and then Trey Palmer in 2022. And from what I can tell, Palmer had way more to do with the fact that Mark Whipple was the offensive coordinator than anything to do with, Frost's system. I don't even know if really there is a Frost system per se. I do think, from what I can tell, his performances on offense are heavily reliant upon who he brings in as offensive coordinator or who he has a quarterback, right? You might have a rough offensive coordinator. We have a great QB. Mackenzie Milton definitely helped him out in 2017. The unfortunate thing is that this year with UCF, I think we're getting an unknown at quarterback and at offensive coordinator, right? Like Steve Cooper is the guy that Frost has tapped to be the offensive coordinator here. He was a analyst from Boise State. Before that, he was an analyst under Frost at Nebraska for 4 years. And then quarterback, like, are we going with Dylan Risk? Are we going with Taven Jackson, not really much known there, right, Nate? So I guess all that to say, like, I don't really know where to go with UCF right now. I'm not grabbing anybody from UCF in drafts right now, at least until I get a little bit of clarity. Because I do think if there's a dual threat quarterback here, Frost has shown that he's willing to let his quarterbacks run, and that could be interesting. But right now, is there anything that you're looking at here with Frost?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to discuss Scott Frost because I am somewhat intrigued, right? Like the Nebraska situation was terrible, and there appears to have been, by all indications, a number of off-field things that were going on with Scott Frost in his life at that time. I don't think it needs to be mentioned in here, but what he was viewed as far as a football mind prior to when he got to Lincoln, was, somebody that people had a lot of really high expectations for, and understandably so. Like at UCF, I mean, they were awesome under him. And his time at Oregon, I believe that was when he overlapped with Chip Kelly a little bit there. Excuse me, a little bit there at Oregon, and he was viewed as one of the better offensive coordinators in the country at that time. So, maybe he gets back to his roots here, and it's not the Big Ten. There's not the pressure of being the hometown hero, like he was in Lincoln. So, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. I don't know. Taven Jackson, as far as does interest me some. I don't know that Dylan Risk is the right fit for Scott Frost. I would, just based off his time with Mackenzie Milton, Adrian Martinez, Nebraska. I do think he likes a quarterback that can move a little bit. I think Taven Jackson kind of fits that profile better than Dylan Risk. There's still the transfer from Miami that was there, right? The one that is basically a running back,
Oh, Ja'Cory Brown? Yeah,
Ja'Cory Brown. Yeah, he's still there, right?
Yes, sir.
So maybe he also gets in the mix. But if Taven Jackson wins, that does interest me a little bit because I liked a lot of what I saw from him, both in high school film and his short run there at Indiana. So I think that could be, I think that could be fun. I'm probably staying away from the running back situation unless we hear some reports that somebody's going to be a surefire, lead dog there. Otherwise, I think it's probably just going to be a committee type situation. So, but QB would be the one spot that I would keep an eye on, especially if it's one of those two dual threat guys, Brown or Jackson, that ends up winning the job. And Jackson was the one he brought with him, right? I mean, that would lead me to think that Jackson's the one that has the best chance here. He was kind of handpicked by this staff.
Yeah, I think it's a good call on the running back position as well, because that's one thing I've been seeing people kind of take shots on different guys towards the end of drafts already between Jaden Nixon and Miles Montgomery. And I almost wrote up Miles Montgomery for the C2C freshman supplemental guide as one of the supplemental players and everything. And but really, as I started looking into it, I was like, I don't know, man. Like, there's like, I don't really think I can consider this one of the 30 players that I can include in this guide. By the way, go check out that guy, $20 on campusofcanton.com. Fantastic read. It's the place, it's always the place that I start with under like when I need to start learning about the freshmen of this upcoming class. So go check that out. Our team does a fantastic job on it. But again, when I was looking at Miles Montgomery, I'm like, I've liked Miles Montgomery for a while. I think he was a great fit, especially under Gus Malzahn. I figured he would be the next back up there at UCF. Problem is that Gus Malzahn is no longer there, and I don't really think he separates that much from Jaden Nixon that I'm like, oh, he's a clear-cut guy that's going to be above the rest of this room. So I'm with you. I think it's going to be a committee situation until, like you said, we're getting reports of, Montgomery or Nixon's just blowing away the rest of the room. Let's go check out the guy that Scott Frost is replacing. Let's go check out where Gus Malzahn is headed now. This is obviously a offensive system that we are always interested in for CFF purposes. And Gus Malzahn left the head coach position at UCF before really I think they could fire him. I think he went ahead and took the job to kind of save face there. He is now the offensive coordinator there at Florida State, which is obviously a huge hire for Mike Norvell, who is looking to turn this program around after the absolute, I don't even know if disaster is too kind of a term for what Florida State was last year, given the expectations of a program like that has. But we'll start with the quarterback talk here with Gus Malzahn. I think we would both agree that Malzahn, when he has a dual threat quarterback, it's pretty much CFF gold, right? Even last year, where there was kind of a mess of the quarterback position for UCF, Malzahn still had KJ Jefferson finish in the top 40 quarterbacks for fantasy points per game. Like, that's pretty impressive given the fact that that whole thing fell apart, right? Before that, Malzahn has been a QB factory, like I said. John Rhys Plumlee in 2022 and 2023. Dylan Gabriel for three games in 2021 was averaging over 30 points a game. Bo Nix in 2019 and 2020. Nick Marshall in 2013, 2014. Like, when he has dual threat guys, they're awesome. When he has pocket passers, like one Mikey Keene and Jarrett Stidham, you can kind of forget about it. So obviously, with him getting Thomas Castellanos, that'll be a really nice fit for Malzahn's system. Should be very solid for CFF. After all, we did see Castellanos finish as a QB 11 in 2023, playing in the same type of schedule here. So, Nee, is there any reason to worry about Thomas Castellanos playing at Florida State this year?
I mean, there's reason to worry because Thomas Castellanos probably just isn't a very good quarterback, but system-wise, yeah, I mean, it's a good fit. I mean, as soon as Castellanos entered the portal, you started hearing Florida State rumors pop up almost immediately, and I was like, huh, interesting. Didn't expect, like, a program level Florida State to be all that interested in Castellanos. Then I was like, well, I mean, I guess Norvell did kind of make Jordan Travis work, right? And Travis was considered a pretty limited passer, especially early on in his career, and that seemed to work out. And then when they hired Gus Malzahn, I was like, okay, now it all makes sense, right? Because Gus, like Tommy C, like signed and played a year under Gus Malzahn, right? I mean, that was,
Yes, sir.
that's where he initially landed, was at UCF. So there's familiarity of system there, and then obviously the fit. You could make the case for Thomas Castellanos being the best runner of any quarterback in the country, and I probably wouldn't argue with you on that. Will he survive and be healthy? I don't know. But it's, I wrote about it in my pre-spring stock up report. Castellanos was on that list for me because to go from, Bill O'Brien, which is literally the worst fit that you could imagine for Thomas Castellanos, to Gus Malzahn, which is one of the better fits. I think that's a really fun pairing. They get, I guess, Deuce Robinson from the portal. Did they get any other portal wide receivers that he's going to have to
Squirrel
throw to?
White.
Squirrel White. Oh man, what are you talking about? Post-type sleeper, Squirrel White.
But I don't know if there's
Post, post, post type.
I don't know if there's a worse like skill set match than Thomas Castellanos' deep ball and Squirrel White's deep throw
Yeah.
abilities.
Right. Yeah. You talk about the difference of Joe Milton versus Thomas Castellanos, night and day. So I think this whole passing scheme will not be all that great. I've never made it a habit to roster Gus Malzahn wide receivers. It's been kind of hit or miss at UCF, but for the most part, I tend to avoid him just because his quarterbacks tend to run so much. It's not something I'm really looking for. So I'll pass on the receivers here, but Castellanos could be fun. What's your thoughts on him and the run game?
So Castellanos, I think, is fun. I'm actually just looking at my rankings. I'm at QB 30, which kind of feels wrong because, like you
Yeah,
said, like
seems a
the
little low.
it seems a little low, but like again, I think it just speaks to just how insane this class is for quarterbacks because there's so many guys ahead of them that I'm like, would I really put him ahead of Eckhouse, Reed, Lopez, McCown? Like, I don't know if I can really do that when, a lot of those guys are very well known in terms of where they're at already. The run game is the thing I find most interesting about this right now, right? Because we do know that Malzahn loves him some workhorse backs, right? I mean, RJ Harvey last 2 years has been top six running back. Before that, Isaiah Bowser, even though he only finishes RB49 in 2022, he got the volume. He just didn't do much with it. I think he was like averaging less than 3 yards
Shouldn't
a
have got the
carry.
volume, but he sure did.
He sure
Talk
did.
about the least efficient runner, and that whole season, I'm screaming, RJ Harvey needs to carry the ball more, and yet he kept going with the plotter. Oh, it turns out maybe RJ Harvey should have got the ball more. He's pretty good.
He's pretty dang good. But even before that, back at Auburn, right, the likes of Tank Bigsby in 2020, Kerryon Johnson in 2017, Cameron Petaway in 2016, Peyton Barber 2015, Cameron Artis Payne in 2014. Like, he had just a stretch of insane running backs there. Like, and I guess, like you said, like as we saw this past couple of years, like when he gets his guy, he's willing to run them into the ground. The question is, does he have his guy at Florida State here, right? That's kind of the major question. They bring back Roydell Williams, who managed to only play 4 games last year to the chagrin of all of us out here. And so he's back in his 2.0 yards per carry from last year. Cam Davis is still hanging around. He didn't transfer when I think he absolutely could have, right? Like Cam Davis, like I know some people at Campus Canton are already kind of down on him, thinking that, he's already kind of blown his stock. But I think there's plenty of programs that would have taken the shot on him. And for him to kind of have a reset after the first year there at Florida State, he could have transferred. He didn't. So I think that there is still some interest with Florida State there. And then they also bring in Asmane Chroma, the true freshman running back who C2C has listed as our number one back for this class. So Nate, do we think that Malzahn has his guy here at Florida State? Are you going to wait for spring reports, or are you taking your shots? Because all three of these guys, one, Roydell Williams is free 99. I think Cam Davis is free 99 as well. And I've seen a couple people take shots on Chroma already. What do you think? Are you going after the Malzahn RB1 here?
No, I mean, it's not something I'm going to prioritize. I do think one of those guys, probably Roydell, just due to seniority, will, get first dibs at it, and will probably be a featured back. I mean, that's what Gus likes. He likes a guy that'll carry the ball 20 plus times a game. I think all three of those guys have the size to be able to do that. I think that was what hurt RJ Harvey early on there at UCF, is that he was undersized. It took him a year or so to really put on some weight, and put on some
Boy,
weight he did.
I was like, boy, did he.
But I think all three of those guys have the requisite size to do that. I don't know that the one that this offensive line is good enough to really produce a high-end quality running back, and two, I just none of those guys, I don't know any of those guys, at least the two that I've seen play, are good enough to do that. You may be looking at somewhere a running back that's in that top 40 to 50 range. Kind of like what we saw early on with Gus at UCF. So yeah, I think he'll feed somebody. Just not sure that I would bet on any of those three quite yet. Do you know, is Chroma, is he gonna be in for the spring? I thought I had heard somewhere that he's not showing up till the summer, but I could be wrong on that.
He was a late flip by Florida State. I can't remember if they did so after early signing day or not. Let me see if I can find if he's an early enrollee. Let's see. Where's my timeline here? Yes, he is signed, but he has not enrolled at Florida State yet. So
Yeah,
he
so
will be coming
he's
in
not
later.
even. Yeah, so it's hard to, for me at least, it's hard to put a whole lot of faith in a freshman running back showing up and beating out, a couple of guys like that when he's not even there for the spring. So yeah, I mean, for me, similar to what's going on at UCF, I'm probably just going to prioritize quarterback, but I'm definitely going to keep an eye on what happens with the running back situation. And Roy Dell, or Cam Davis, or even Chroma could be a nice early waiver, type option.
Oh yeah, people will be running to the waiver wires the moment they see one running back gets 20 carries and they're not, carrying for 3 or less yards per carry. Let's move on to our next Power Four head coaching change, and that is Mr. Dana Holgorsen, formerly a offensive analyst for Nebraska, got promoted to offensive coordinator towards the end of the season for the Cornhuskers here. Nate, I'll let you take over here. What are your thoughts on Holgorsen being the guy for Nebraska this year?
Well, I mean, in terms of CFF purposes, I mean, Holgo is, I mean, he's pretty much a kingmaker when it comes to quarterback and wide receivers. I mean, there's very few coaches that have been as consistent with producing high-end quality options in the passing game than Holgo has, both at his time at West Virginia, even at Houston. Like we talked about in our Slack channel, the fact that he made Donovan Smith like actually pretty good as a quarterback was nothing short of amazing, given that now we know just how limited Donovan Smith was. I mean, he was a bad quarterback,
Oh yeah.
and Holgorsen still, I mean, he had, I want to say, like 22 or 23 passing touchdowns to only 6 INTs, and he had a handful of rushing touchdowns too with Smith. So that was impressive. And obviously, Clayton Thune was really good, with him at Houston, and countless number of great quarterback and wide receiver options during his time at Texas Tech under Leach and his time at Oklahoma State under Mike Gundy. So yeah, I mean, it's a very consistent history. Where you can probably avoid the running back situation, and the quarterback and receiver options are usually fantastic. Now, I mean, I think we got to temper expectations, right? Because this is the Big Ten. The schedule is tough in the Big Ten, and it's not the same as West Virginia or Houston. And playing in Nebraska in mid-November with cold temperatures and significant wind is also way different than playing, in Houston in mid-Nebraska or in mid-November. So, that being said, I'm interested in Dylan Raiola as kind of a late round flyer in redrafts for a quarterback option. And Barney and Key are two guys that interest me a little bit in the pass game as well.
What about Nzia Hunter, the wide receiver coming over from Cal?
Yeah, that's like I wouldn't be afraid to take I mean, that's probably a guy you can get with one of your last picks, if you're in like a 30 round draft or something like that. That's somebody I would
I
take a
don't
look
know,
at.
man. I let me look up my drafts recently. I think he's been going decently high. I'll see what I can find
Really?
real quick.
I wouldn't have expected that, but yeah, I mean, depending on value, like this is a really good receiver room, and I would be fine taking shots depending on where you can get them with all three of those guys. I mean, Holgorsen does have a history of leaning on the slot receiver, but I mean, there have been plenty of times guys like Kevin White, Even Sills to a certain degree at West Virginia were really good as far as outside receivers, and I think either Key or Barney could be really, really solid.
All right, I am. Yep, I was thinking of somebody else because Nazeeha Hunter is still available in the one best ball man right now, and the other one that I finished up, he was taken like round 29. So
Yeah, I feel like that's about right.
I'm thinking of somebody else there. Yeah, you kind of mentioned you basically touched on all the major points, right, with Dana Holgorsen, right? Like the dream spots are the quarterback, the wide receiver, the running back is kind of the more inconsistent piece, but we've had some guys, right, out of his system before. Alton McCaskill most recently in 2021, Justin Crawford in 2016, 2017, Wendell Smallwood the year before that. It just makes me think about Emmett Johnson, right? Because he's a guy that I've targeted a little bit already early on this year, right? With so few great running backs returning for college fantasy, you're kind of digging deep pretty quickly in drafts. And Emmett Johnson's a guy that I've kind of touched on pretty early on here. And my thought process is like, well, yeah, it might have been good last year, but now Holgorsen's taken over. Maybe he gets less of a role. But it was when Holgorsen took over last year that Emmett Johnson really kind of came forward, right? They did a lot less Dante Dowdle. They brought Emmett Johnson in, and Johnson was getting fed, man. Like, 17 opportunities against USC. We got 22 opportunities versus Wisconsin, 24 opportunities versus Iowa. Like, Johnson was being fed, and makes me optimistic that he will kind of break that mold a little bit of inconsistency from Holgorsen, and Holgorsen thinks he's got a guy here. So what do you think, Nate? Do you think that's a mirage because Holgorsen was just working with what he had towards the end of the year, or do you think that's a sign of what's to come?
I'm probably a little hesitant to invest it in Emmett Johnson at probably what his cost is right now. I don't know if you have his ADP pulled up or kind of where he's been going in some of your drafts. I think you've been taking him most of the time, so
Yeah.
I don't
I've been
know.
taking him around like the fifth, sixth round, I think, is usually where I've been taking him.
That's too rich for me for Dana Holgorsen running back. Yeah, I mean he's had some players produce, but it's like you said, it's been really inconsistent. I tend to think that the offense is going to look a fair amount different coming into 2025 than it did towards the end of 24. I think he was just kind of trying to keep things afloat last year, but he clearly showed that he's willing to lean on Johnson. So I think that there'll be a little bit more downfield passing for Rayola, and maybe that impacts Johnson some.
Okay, I took Johnson in the eighth and ninth round of the two drafts that I got him in. It was in the third draft where somebody took him in the fifth round, which I think is a little rich. So eighth and ninth round is kind of where I've been
Yeah,
getting
I
them,
mean
and I like that a lot better.
that's yeah, that's probably fair. I think I don't know if you have the playoff schedule pulled up for Nebraska. I know
Not great.
it's disheartening.
It's
I
not
want to say
great.
I know they have Penn State and Iowa at Penn State and Iowa in 2 of the 3 weeks. I'm not sure what the third one is. It is rough, I know that.
I mean, it's kind of an interesting question, I guess, off the top of my head. And I know that like Big Ten defenses are pretty consistent year to year and everything like that, right? But like we were talking about like Haynes King and like, Georgia Tech players being unstartable towards the end of the year, right? And then Haynes King went and not only performed well against Georgia at the end of the year, but was QB1 overall for that week. Granted, going to eight overtimes helps,
Yeah, you think that might play a role.
but like even still, like that was like 50 something points. He was at like 40 plus by the end of regulation, right? And so I think that be cautiously optimistic that maybe Iowa and Penn State aren't as scary as it looks. I
I
don't know.
think, yeah, I mean, it's a little different in the Big Ten because,
That's like the
again,
culture.
at that point in the season, the weather really, really sucks
That's true.
in Iowa City and Lincoln. So, like, Georgia and Georgia Tech aren't dealing with 30 mile an hour wind and it being 7 degrees outside. But
That's probably
also,
fair.
like, Georgia's not afraid when they need to get in a shootout, right? Iowa is terrified, even when they need to, of getting in a shootout. There is no chance for a shootout when you're playing Iowa and Minnesota and Penn State and stuff like that. It is no, let's get this game over with in 47 minutes and
But
move on with our
who does that
Saturday.
benefit the most? The running back. The running back that's going to get 20 carries that game
As long as
to
Dana feeds him, sure.
That's true. All right, let's move on to the next one here. Let's go talk about Mr. Rich Rodriguez. We mentioned him earlier. He is formerly the head coach at Jacksonville State, now headed over to become the head coach at West Virginia. He was the head coach at West Virginia already once back in 2001 through 2007. I believe he left that job in order to become the head coach of Michigan. I believe it was after that point. Nate, I'm going to use one of your terminology here. I think Rich Rodriguez is a certified CFF QB kingmaker. Just year after year with his dual threat quarterbacks, you can expect them to have a ton of production, more production than you would normally see out of a dual threat quarterback. At Jacksonville State, was pretty inconsistent his first couple of years, but it had more really to do with like QB injuries and really just not finding the right guy than it did in terms of just the system itself not really working out. Finally, we got to year three. Tyler Huff, full-time starter, ended up being QB9 on the year. Absolutely phenomenal year for him. So what do you think, Nate? What are we looking at here with West Virginia's quarterback competition? I know we got Nico Marquiol. We got Jalen Henderson coming over from Texas A&M. We got Max Brown as well coming in for whatever reason. Which of those three guys are you kind of looking at?
Well, I kind of like what you alluded to. I think the competition comes down to Nico Markiel and Jalen Henderson. Henderson was the one. Well, I guess you could say Max Brown was also handpicked by the staff, but both, Henderson's the transfer that comes over from Texas A&M. I think he was also at Fresno prior to that. I don't
That is
remember
correct.
where he was at before A&M. Yeah. So, I mean, he kind of fits, as far as the three, he kind of fits the mold the best of what Rich Rod prefers from, his quarterbacks, like we saw with Huff, like we saw with what was his name there in Michigan? Shoelaces or whatever was his nickname. Oh my gosh, the quarterback that he had that went absolutely bananas, put up like Heisman Trophy numbers. Anyways,
Nate, you're asking me to remember back to when I was like 9 years old.
I forget his nickname was either like Shoestring or Shoelaces. I don't know. Chris Kay and Mike Brainbridge are screaming at me right now for not remembering his name. And then obviously, with Tate at Arizona and Slayton, I mean, the list goes on and on, for Rich Rod. But he likes dual threat quarterbacks, and Jalen Henderson seems to be the best fit. I've tried to read up on some of the early reports there at West Virginia, and it sounds like it's going to be a pretty good competition between Markiel and Henderson. Markiel, has got some experience this past year, the past 2 years really, with Garrett Green being kind of banged up. I think Markiel's like undefeated as quarterback. He's like 4-0 or something like
Oh,
that as a
nice.
starter, even though he's just looked okay. But he's sneaky athletic too. It's kind of like Huff when he came over. Like, I don't think anybody thought Huff was going to run like he did under Rich Rod, just because prior to that at the FCS school he was at before, like he really didn't run that much. I think he had like 400 yards rushing at his previous school. So I could see Markiel being one of those guys if he were to win the job, that we look back like, oh, like he's actually more athletic than we thought and could put up, something like 650 and 10 rushing touchdowns type deal on the ground.
Yeah, Neil Brown hasn't really been known for utilizing dual threat quarterbacks very well. I mean, shoot, what has Markiel ran for? Like less than 3 yards per carry when he has run? Like they've tried, just haven't really had the system to really not exploit. What's the word I'm looking for? To really take advantage of that. I guess that is exploit. I'm not sure. I can't speak today. Good Lord, I'm struggling here, man. Running backs is something that I think I've heard referred to a couple of times with Rich Rodriguez. Again, similar thing, right? Like he's a running back kingmaker as well. And when you look at guys like, Denard Robertson, Trey Stewart this past year, right? Like Steve Slayton back in
Yard
2006, right?
Robertson, thank you.
Like holy mackerel, like you're looking at insane production at the running back position.
Keep in mind, Denard Robinson was the quarterback. That's what I was trying to think of.
Oh, gotcha.
But you could confuse him for a running back because he ran for like 1,500 yards or something stupid.
1,700, actually.
Yeah.
So like when his running backs go off, they go absolutely off. The problem is like it's not as consistent as I really want it to be. Right? I mean, the 2 years prior at Jacksonville State, we hardly had a running back hit 500 yards. At Jacksonville State, I go back and look at his time in Arizona. It's very up and down with the RB production there. And Michigan was the same way because, like, you know, Darnell Robinson rushed for 1,700 yards. The running back as well, I think, also ran for like 1,000 yards that year. Year before that, they barely had a running back named Miner rush for just over 500 yards. Right? So, like, not as consistent as I want it to be, but the good news is I think there's a pretty clear lead candidate to be the main guy at West Virginia this year. I as much as I might like LJ Turner and the upside he might bring in, Jaheim White's got this room on lockdown. I would be shocked if Rodriguez did not utilize the skill that White has. Is there any, are you kind of thinking the same way, Nate?
I mean, I'm Jaheim White is somebody I've been a fan of, for the last year. And, I wrote about him in my spring stock report, somebody that I think whose stock is clearly ascending. Not only are we seeing CJ Donaldson move on, who, White ceded a lot of snaps to the last couple of years, but Rich Rod, when he finds his guy, like he did last year, like he did at West Virginia, we tend to see that guy be extremely productive. And so could he do what Trey Stewart did last year? Probably not. But he's a really good running back, and I think I would be hard pressed to find maybe. I mean, there may not be another running back who has a higher ceiling right now than Jaheim White in college football, as far as production wise. Like, will he go for 2,000 yards and 20 touchdowns? No, probably not. But if anybody could do that in college football this year, I think Jaheim White might have the best chance to do that.
Yeah, looking at the top running backs here, right? I don't necessarily completely disagree, right? Like maybe Desmond Reed, if Pitt just completely decides to rely on him to the nth degree, even Darius Taylor, like he's not really efficient enough to do that. Dylan Edwards might be another one I'd say has probably the highest ceiling of the bunch, right? Between his receiving and his explosive ability on the ground. But yeah, I agree. Like looking at my RB list, like there's probably not more than five running backs I would say have a higher ceiling. So, all right, let's move on to our next coaching change here. Let's go talk about Jason Beck, the former offensive coordinator there at New Mexico, moving on to be the offensive coordinator at Utah. He just got done helping Bronco Mendenhall and Devin Dampier have a phenomenal season there at New Mexico. Third in the country in yards per game offensively, second in the country in rushing offense per game. Obviously, Devin Dampier was the QB3 in fantasy points per game. We saw Eli Sanders at times be a epic workhorse back for CFF purposes, finished the year as RB40 in fantasy points per game because he kind of fell off towards the end there. And then obviously Luke Weisong had himself a pretty productive year. Problem is he just had one touchdown on the year. Here's kind of my question when it comes to Beck, right? 2023, I just mentioned all those, yardage and, finishes for the New Mexico offense last year. Beck's first year as an offensive coordinator at Syracuse, which is the first year he called plays, period, wasn't great. 315 yards per game, so that was 108th in the country that year. Passing yards was abysmal, 152 yards per game. It was like bottom 10 in the country that year. And then rushing yards was all right, 163.3 yards per game, 55th. On one hand, I can't blame Beck too much here, considering his quarterback options were Garrett Schrader and Carlos Del Rio Wilson. And then, heck, by the end of the season, he just straight up didn't have a quarterback. Then he goes, obviously, gets a little bit of rehabilitation under Bronco Mendenhall here. Are you kind of expecting a better second go around here for Jason Beck in the Power Four here, Nate? Or is there legitimate reason to be concerned that this offense is not going to translate to the Big 12?
Yeah, I'm probably somewhere in between. I do have some concerns. One, I just in the couple, I don't know, two or three games that I got to watch Dampier, and we talked about this a little bit in the Dynasty show. Excuse me. I don't know how well his passing acumen will translate to coming up a level here to the P4. I get it. It's the Big 12. It's not the Big 10. But I am a little concerned there. I just don't know that he's a good enough passer. And my other concern is that, I mean, Kyle Whittingham is still the head coach, right? A little bit different from Bronco, in that Bronco was not afraid to just say, sure, go crazy. Let the quarterback be this ball dominant guy who is, who is either passing every single snap or taking off running every other snap. I mean, that's what he's okay with. That's never been Kyle Whittingham's style. He's been more of kind of West Coast Iowa kind of guy. Like, I'm okay to grind it out. Now, when he had Cam Rising, they were able to play a little bit more up tempo. But at the same time, it doesn't ignore the fact that Jason Beck loves to have a very ball dominant quarterback, and that's what he's expecting. That's why he brought his quarterback with him. So I don't think we're going to see him be a top 10 quarterback, but I think top 20 is in his range of outcomes there at Utah for Devin Dampier. What exactly this offense looks like, I don't know. I it's hard to put a whole lot of trust in the Utah running back room at this point. I mean, I've done it every year, and I feel like it's slapped me in the face the last 3 or 4 years here. Thank you, Jalen Glover. So we'll just this kind of, I'm kind of wait and see. I'm not as in on Marshawn Lloyd, on Wayshon Parker as a lot of people are here.
Nate, just believe, man. Just believe in your boy. Now, I do like the fit there. I mean, Wayshon Parker, right? Like, part of his problem last year was quite frankly, he looked really good at Wazoo, and just that system wasn't giving him the volume. There's a reason why he didn't follow Ben Arbuckle to Oklahoma. I think that he wanted a system to go to a place where they will feature a number one back. And like I mentioned earlier, like Eli Sanders got quite a bit of carries for New Mexico last year before he kind of tapered off towards the end of the season. But Parker, in my opinion, is a better back. I think he'll perform really well for Utah. And I think he'll kind of take a little bit of I think he's going to take some of that pressure off of Dampier a little bit, right? Like they don't need Dampier to be upright the entire time, him to create magical plays and everything. I think they'll want to hand the ball off quite a bit to Parker there. And you kind of mentioned like with Dampier, right? Like I still think he very much, I have in my top 10 quarterbacks for this year, QB7, mostly because again, I agree. Probably gonna see a step back from last year. No doubt about it. He's still pretty much locked in for 500 rushing yards. In my opinion, right? He had 1,000 rushing yards at New Mexico last year. They're gonna let him run. At least I hope so.
Sure. Yeah,
My
they
only,
better because he can't pass.
yeah, you're right, 100%. My only thing is, Kyle Whittingham did just come off a year where he felt every bit of what it's like to have literally no other options in that quarterback room, right? And pretty much a lot of those options are still there. Like between Isaac Wilson and stuff like that, if Devin Dampier goes down, they're right back to where they were last year. Although they have in my opinion, a better offensive coordinator to maybe fix that problem this year. But maybe they're a little gun shy on letting him run, especially early on in the season, because they're like, well, if he goes down, we're screwed. But.
Well, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't think that they can go in with that mindset. Like, if you bring Devin Dampier in to be your quarterback and you say we're
Sure.
gonna hold off on letting him run, then you shouldn't have brought in Devin Dampier as your
Hey,
quarterback.
Bill O'Brien tried his damnedest with that mindset with Tommy C. So,
That's very true.
all right. Speaking of Alabama offensive coordinators like Bill O'Brien, let's go talk about Ryan Grubb being reunited with the Alabama Crimson Tide and Kalen DeBoer over here. He obviously went to be an offensive coordinator in the NFL, and obviously an opportunity that it's hard to pass up on. Didn't go very well. Obviously fired after his first year. I personally call this karma because he lied to the Bama players about him being their offensive coordinator in 2024, then left them high and dry as soon as they couldn't enter the portal anymore. But guess what, Ryan? You're back and you are going to coach these guys as the fates have, as God himself has decreed. You will coach these children. Anyway, Nate, I guess I haven't thrown one over to you to talk about first in a while. So I'll ask you, what is your hope here with Ryan Grubb coming back and reuniting with Kalen DeBoer?
I mean, I love it, dude. I love it. Grubb was awesome every time him and DeBoer have you know, been partners in crime. I mean, obviously things went well for them at Washington. They made the national championship. Michael Penix was incredible. And things were great at Fresno, you know, and every step of the way that Ryan Grubb has been the right-hand man for Kalen DeBoer, they have produced at a really, really high rate. So, yeah, I love it. I love the fact that as soon as he became available, Kalen DeBoer was like, sorry, Nick Sheridan, thanks, but you've just been demoted. So,
here's the thing. I don't think Nick Sheridan argued much.
Sure. Yeah, he probably got to keep his pay. So it's almost like he's getting paid as an OC, but doesn't have the responsibilities anymore. So I've thought about this a lot this offseason. Like I feel like Ty Simpson is one of the biggest sleepers in all of college football. Like Nobody is talking about a Kalen DeBoer, Ryan Grubb quarterback. Can you imagine saying last offseason?
The thought process is like people are in love with Keelan Russell, and I understand. Keelan Russell is fantastic talent coming out as a freshman this year. But guys, Ty Simpson has been with Alabama for many, many years at this point. If he ever felt like he was not going to earn this job, I feel like he would have transferred out at this point. Too, a lot of people quickly point out, like, well, Simpson couldn't beat out Jalen Milroe. Do people not understand the politics that were involved with Jalen Milroe starting as a quarterback for Alabama?
He was the leader of the program.
He was basically the leader of the program. He was what held together that team after Nick Saban left.
Yeah.
Right? If he was ever going to lose that job, they would have seen a massive revolt. Too, there's also the NIL part of it where Jalen Milroe was responsible for a lot of those guys getting paid outside of that program. And so, like, you're literally biting the hand that feeds you if you start advocating for a guy besides Milroe to be the starting quarterback, right? I think Simpson's better than people give him credit for. Now, granted, he's been sub 60% of completion, the action we have seen him, which obviously isn't great, but I also still think he's a much better passer than Milroe was, and I think that he'll be a much better fit for this system if he does win out. But that's kind of my hope, right, is that regardless of who wins this job, between Russell or Simpson, we get back to what DeBoer and Grubb's system has looked like in the past. And to me, mm-hmm. that is going to be a huge benefit to one Ryan Williams.
Sure.
Ryan Williams finished as the wide receiver 32 last year. But one thing I think I'm thinking about writing an article about this, about guys who's, you know, out of conference versus their in-conference performances were like vastly different. Ryan Williams is actually kind of crazy. Right, like this, his split between conference and non-con might be one of the most insane things I've ever seen. Out of conference, he was 19.2 fantasy points per game. In conference, he was 11.94 fantasy points per game. That's a difference between wide receiver 12 in non-con and wide receiver 105 in conference. I'm praying to God that with a more consistent passing quarterback and Ryan Grubb at the helm, is going to actually justify Ryan Williams being taken in the late first, late early second, because that's what people are banking on with that price right now. Like, they're hoping for a 2023 Roma Dunze season. That and also the talent, obviously, as well. But, like, if that doesn't happen, boy, things could get bad for, you know, taking Williams that high in drafts right now. What do you think, Nate? Do you think that's the path we're headed towards?
Yeah, I like a lot of the asset. I think this is an undervalued offense because everybody is so stuck on how things looked last year, right? And Jalen Milroe, again, that was a ball dominant quarterback that consumed everything, right? Mm-hmm. He did not allow for the pass game to open up downfield. He did not allow for lots of times the run game to be as big of a factor because he often was the run game, right? That changes now. Ty Simpson, I do think, is a better passer. I get it. If you're concerned about Ty Simpson because of what you've seen in spring games or because they've got a five-star coming in, good. keep thinking that way because I want to keep getting Ty Simpson at the end of drafts. And as long as everybody thinks Keelan Russell is going to win that job, then I will be happy to take Ty Simpson with one of my last picks, and get the starting quarterback for Kalen DeBoer week one. I'm with you as far as Ryan Williams. I think could be unlocked this year. I mean, I think Jeremy Bernard is also a decent option if the pass game's
Agreed.
better and he's the number two. He could benefit from that because Ryan Williams is going to get double teamed so often. I also think that Jam Miller is a legitimate option now too. I think this is a little bit of a stock up for him. Obviously, his running mate is gone, similar like we talked about with C.J. Donaldson leaving West Virginia. Miller's going to pretty much have that backfield to himself right now. And I think that he's also a little undervalued. So I kind of like a lot of the options here at Alabama as kind of these, just kind of sneaky plays that you can get good value on.
Yeah, I agree. I've been taking Jim Miller right around like anywhere between like the fifth and eighth round is kind of where I've been aiming for him. To like you said, that feels crazy because it is an Alabama running back at the end of the day. Yes, obviously it's systems, not logos, but at the same time, like Alabama is going to be a team that is going to be dominant in a lot of their games. They're going to be in a positive game script towards the end of games. Guess who's going to benefit from that? Jam Miller, right? We saw it with Dylan Johnson in Washington's 2023 run. Like when they needed to close a game out, they just handed off to their 200-plus pound back. Jim Miller's that guy. Because quite frankly, a lot of the backs that Bama has behind him, I don't really like as much. So, all right, let's move on to our next guy here, and that is Matt Lubick, the offensive coordinator formerly of Nevada, headed back to Kansas where he was a offensive analyst for Kansas between 2022 and 2023. Over there, Nate, you specifically wanted to bring up Lubick as one of your most impactful offensive coordinator changes this year. What do you got for us?
Yeah, I wanted to bring it up because I feel like if you go back and look at things, so obviously it was not a good season for the Jayhawks last year, right? A lot of expectations that they could compete for a conference title there, maybe be kind of a dark horse playoff type team. And with everything they were bringing back, and clearly that did not work out.
Hey
But if
man,
you
they did the most important thing, and that was not Colorado out of playoff contention.
but if you go back and look at if you go back and look at things last year, you'll notice about halfway to two-thirds of the way through the season, there was a little bit of a switch that was flipped. And all of a sudden that offense looked much, much better. And Jalen Daniels became an actual viable CFF quarterback at some point. I think at one point during the season, Leipold turned to Jeff Grimes because I think Jeff Grimes is legitimately one of the worst offensive coordinators in college football. I think Leipold looked at Grimes and said, "I'm sorry, this isn't working out. We're doing our thing. We're going back to our Kansas way," like we saw with Andy Kotelnicki before he left for Penn State, and said, "You can hang out here for the next month or so, but you're just going to be taking up space in the office. You'll find a job after this season's over," which is exactly what happened. And they went back to the Kansas system. Things changed a lot once we kind of hit October, mid-October last year. So Lubick is somebody they've brought back because he was part of that Kotelnicki group. He worked a couple of years on a Kotelnicki as an analyst, as a QB guru for them. And we what did we see last year out of Nevada, right? With what's his name? Brennan. What's the quarterback's name there at
Brandon
Nevada
Lewis.
last year? Brennan Lewis. Yeah. Lewis, who is a very limited quarterback. He was not very good before
Oh, yeah.
Lubick took over at Nevada. Looked like a really strong quarterback last year. So I think that bodes well for Jalen Daniels this year, that he looks more like, or this offense looks more like it did 2 years ago under Kotelnicki. I think the big key is what we're always wondering with Jalen Daniels, right? And is what's his health going to be like? Because as we just saw, I saw this morning, it sounds like he had a knee procedure this offseason, and Jalen Daniels isn't even going to participate in spring, or if he does, it won't be until the very end. So it's just one thing after another with his health.
Yeah, it is definitely hard to, and this is coming from a guy who I mean, I shoot. How long was I on the Jalen Daniels train for? Like 2, 3 years, Nate. I feel like I was hyping him up for so long, but at this point, like, I just can't do it anymore. The guy has a cook noodle for a back. His skin is made of paper. His, you know, bones are made of glass, or whatever the SpongeBob reference is. Like, the dude just always finds a new way to get hurt. So, again, definitely a lot of interesting things here, right? One, also, how much does Brendan Lewis owe Matt Lubick for the gig he got at Memphis and whatever NIL money that comes with that? Because, like, Brendan Lewis is not a good quarterback. I don't know what Memphis is thinking of bringing him in and hoping that he's going to be anything good there, because I don't think he fits that system at all there. I also teased this earlier, mentioned they got Brendan Lewis to be a good quarterback. Lubick was actually the offensive coordinator for Nebraska when Adrian Martinez had his best season. So again, like you said, he just works well with different quarterbacks across all different platforms here. I like the hire, obviously. Be great to see Kansas get back to where they go.
Do you know who they? I think they got a couple of receivers out of the portal, and I can't remember who they were, because they obviously lost, I want to say, all three of their starting wide receivers at Kansas last year.
Yes, I do believe they did.
Skinner and a couple of the other guys. They were all in their last year of eligibility. I can't remember who they got out of the portal, though.
I can look it up here real quick, but it is an interesting point that you're bringing up. Something I meant to bring up just a second ago was that under Lubick's system last year in Nevada, they quietly had 2 90-plus target receivers last year. Now, again, you had Brendan Lewis thrown in the ball, so like they couldn't really do that much with it. But, you know, something to kind of keep in the back of your mind.
That, I think his last name was Barham or something like that. He was actually really good for Nevada down the stretch last year.
All right, Kansas position wide receiver. Thank you, On Three, for providing us this information. They are bringing in a guy named Bryson Canty. From what school is that? Columbia. They bring in Emmanuel Henderson from Alabama.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
They bring in Levy Wentz from Albany. They bring in Cameron Pickett from Ball State. And looks like that's it. So a couple of SDS transfers. Emmanuel Henderson probably going to play in the slot there, you would think.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Love Lubick coming back to Kansas. Hopefully we get back to what we know and love for Kansas. I'll ask you, Nate. Running back situation there at Kansas. Who do you have your bets on? They got Daniel Hyshaw coming back. They brought in, I think, LaShawn Williams from Iowa as well. And I think there's one other
guy. That's right. Yeah. Williams was set to go to Memphis, and then he did a U-turn and went over to Kansas. Yeah. I mean, so Hyshaw, very, very similar to Jalen Daniels. It's like, when I see him healthy, I'm really impressed by what I see. Unfortunately, it's not something we get to see very often. So he seems to always have something going on. So, but he's somebody that I would be willing to take some late round flyers on. Obviously, the system has been good for running backs, and part of that is because Devin Neal was just awesome. But Hyshaw showed when healthy, he's a good player.
Yeah, Hyshaw, oh god, in this last draft he got taken in the sixth round. I don't think but that's not how it's typically been. I hope that's not where he stays, because he got taken in the 11th round in the draft before that, and then I know in the other one, like, I got him real late. I got him in the 19th round in the first best ball that I did, so I guess he's moving up draft boards real quick, which is very unfortunate, because I don't think he's worth that.
Yeah, I mean, good player, and you might get paid off like a sixth rounder if he stays healthy. But boy, that's pretty rich for somebody with his injury history.
Gotcha. All right, let's move on to our second to last coach we'll be talking about today, and that is Mr. Matthew Leftwich. For those of you who don't know, that is the former offensive coordinator
Mac Leftwich.
Did I mess him up between Mac Leftwich?
Mac.
Well, Mac.
Know. Maybe I'm making that up.
I don't know. Actually, hold on. Now we got to know. Now we got to know.
I'm 95% sure.
It is Mac. It is indeed Mac. I was confusing him. I was confusing Matthew Matt his, Lubick his evil twin. And Mac Leftwich. I got those two confused. So, yeah, Mac, not Matt. Former offensive coordinator at Texas Tech, or at Texas State, now at Texas Tech. Really the right-hand man for G.J. Kinney the last several years, right? At Texas State, before that, Incarnate Word. This is, I mean, one, it's clear Leftwich has had no problem putting together good offenses, at least with when he's with G.J. Kinney, right? Like, they have had great offenses at Texas State. They've had a good at Incarnate Word. Now, the question is, can he do it on his own, right? This is also the second time we've seen Texas Tech win a highly offensive or highly sought-after offensive coordinator in the last couple of years. The first one failed to translate his system. Will the same thing kind of befall Leftwich here? Maybe the problem is Joey McGuire. I don't know. But, Nate, what are you kind of thinking here? What when you see Leftwich going to Texas Tech here, what do you think?
I like it. I mean, I think it's a good hire. He's one of those guys similar to Arbuckle that before, you know, he's always been kind of paired up with an offensive guru as a head coach. And so it's hard to differentiate, like, okay, what's his, what's Kinney's? I just know that everybody in the coaching community just raves about Leftwich. Same thing we heard about Arbuckle, you know, before he left from being under Zach Kittley. So it's just one of those things. I will trust that the community at large is going to be right on him. And clearly Joey McGuire sees that and replaces Zach Kittley with him. So yeah, I think we've seen enough there, you know, both of his stops, Incarnate Word and Texas State, that lead me to believe that this is going to continue to be a really strong offense. Texas Tech has shown they're willing to invest the resources and get players out of the portal to keep this offense, you know, humming, or at least maybe potentially even take a step forward here. I'm really curious to see kind of what happens in the QB room, because I think their backup might be better than their starter. But I don't think that they could ever just give Baron Morton the boot or sit him if he's healthy. The problem is he's also never healthy. but yeah, I mean, I think that this offense is going to be good. Exactly which pieces of it are going to be awesome is a little bit of the concern, right? Because the running back room looks very talented. But there's also three guys there that could all be, you know, primary contributors. So do they let somebody be a workhorse like they did Taj Brooks? I'm not sure. And the situation with the wide receiver room, I mean, they lost Josh Kelly, right? And they bring back Douglas, who was really strong towards the end of last year. And then they paid Virgil, you know, like close to $1 million to come be one of the boundary receivers there. So you have to think he's going to play a role,
which is one of the interesting things that I'm kind of keeping an eye on with this wide receiver room, because Douglas and Eakin are the two best wide receivers returning from last year. They both play on the outside, so it's like, who's moving to the slot?
Yeah,
right. And the slot's going to be the interesting part, because based on Leftwich's history the last 2 years at Texas State, right, Joey Hobert's been the main target in those offenses. But then you look at Incarnate Word, the top two receivers there were the two outside guys. So maybe it's just a case where, they just go for their two top guys, right? Like, regardless of where they're at on the field, they just feed the guys that they want to.
How do you see the running back room playing out? Are you investing heavily in this room?
I'm thinking about taking some shots on Jacoby Williams. I'm not going to lie. Maybe Chris Kay's.
Okay.
Well, here's the thing. Jacoby Williams is going like round 25 plus. You can get him for free. Versus Quentin Joyner is a guy that just in this draft I'm looking at right now, I really need to get this ADP put together so I can have better numbers to give everybody here. Where the heck is Joyner? Joyner's been going like fourth, fifth round. Like, he's been going very, very high in drafts. And I like Quentin Joyner. He went 2-5. Dadgum, Josh. 2-5 in this.
Chevalier?
Yeah.
Yeah, Chevalier's 100% in on Joyner.
So, like, I think maybe if Joyner falls to like the fourth, fifth round, I'll take him there. And I'll take a late shot on Jacoby Williams, because I do think there's going to be a workhorse back here, right? Ishmael Mani didn't have a great season last year, but that was also because he got screwed, in my opinion, getting only 4 of 25 rushing touchdowns that offense scored when he's the lead back. Like, come on, Leftwich, you can do your boy better than that. The previous year when Mani got the appropriate number of touchdowns, he finishes RB19 on the year, right?
How big is Mani?
Mani is, if I remember correctly, I thought he was pretty sizable.
Because just you're working under the assumption that somebody's going to be a workhorse here, but you're also thinking you might take some shots on Jacoby Williams, and I'm just like,
Mahdi
I don't
was
know that.
5'9", 180.
Okay, all right, well, then, fair enough then. Because my point was going to be that I don't think Jacoby Williams can be the workhorse because he's about 5'9", 180. But if Mahdi did it, now granted this is not the Sun Belt, but still, if they were willing to give Mahdi 185, 190 touches, then who's to say they wouldn't do that for Jacoby Williams? Probably who's to say would be the collective that just paid Quentin Joyner a bunch of money.
Exactly. I would
They'll probably be
agree.
the ones to say, no, that's our workhorse.
And maybe it all works out after the spring and Jacoby Williams is like, well, you're not going to make me the main guy. I'm transferring then.
To Texas State, how great would
Dude, that'd be so
that
fun. Oh my God. Who is the offensive coordinator now at Texas State? Do you know off the top of your head?
I don't know, maybe Kenny just said I'll just be the full-time guy now. I don't
Yeah,
know.
probably makes sense. How do you see the quarterback position playing out here? I mean, like obviously you kind of touched on earlier that we think it's Morton by default, but here's the thing, like TJ Finley, who's not a good quarterback, finishes QB 30 in 2023 under this system, and he is not mobile like at all hardly. And then Jordan McLeod finishes QB 17 in fantasy points per game last year under this system. Morton's going undrafted in best ball leagues right now. Is he just worth a late round shot? Like, if he's going that late, like just take him in the last two rounds just for the system, just hoping that he stays healthy.
If he's not being drafted, then yeah, that's right there with Ty Simpson for me. Like that's the kind of player I would love to take a late round flyer on, because again, he's not is if healthy, he's not going to lose that job. Even though I do think that Will Hammond is a better quarterback than him. But there, he's put in too much time with Joey McGuire for that to be a reality that he would just straight up lose that job. So yeah, I think that's a really good I mean, he had off-season shoulder surgery, so you're gonna want to follow the read the tea leaves on that come spring. But yeah, I mean, I think that's a really strong late round flyer option.
All right, let's finish up here with one last guy here, and that is the legend himself, Slade Nagel.
What a great name.
A fantastic name. Formerly coming from LSU, he was the special teams coordinator and the tight ends coach at LSU, but more importantly, he was the offensive coordinator for 1 year at Tulane under Willie Fritz, and now he is reuniting with Willie Fritz here at Houston, becoming the offensive coordinator. I'll let you kind of dive into like the ins and outs of what to expect with Slade Nagel as the play caller here in name, but I find it really, really weird that Fritz just didn't have Nagel come be the offensive coordinator immediately, right? Because like I understand, like, yeah, LSU, they're a big team. They probably can pay better as a special teams coordinator than a Houston can as a offensive coordinator, right? Like I get the pay there, right? But then why join Fritz now? Like why not just sit there and say like, hey man, like I appreciate it, unless you're willing. Maybe they did offer him more after a year, but like Willie Fritz had to know that Kevin Barbet was always going to be a failure at offensive coordinator, right? Like that was never going to work out. Just my thought. I was just like, that's my this is weird moment of the week, I guess. I don't know where I'm saying anymore. Nate, save me, man. What kind of offense can we expect here with Nagel now at Houston?
The fact that he didn't follow him over to Houston was a little strange, because they had so much success, together at Tulane those last couple of years there, that it seemed like he should have followed Fritz. And maybe it was just a situation where he needed to stay closer to home, so that's why he stayed at LSU for a year. Maybe it was he thought he was going to get a better job, and then Willie Fritz had to hire somebody, and he obviously made a poor decision, and did not go with Slade Nagel. So who knows? But he's there now, and I think the just based off what we saw the last couple of years at Tulane, that the addition of Slade Nagel over Kevin Barbet is a massive, massive upgrade. And these two know each other; they've worked together. I can't get the production of Tajay Spears under Slade Nagel out of my head. I'm not saying Dean Connors is going to go for 1,700 yards and 20 touchdowns or whatever like Tajay Spears did under Slade Nagel, but I mean, it was incredible how good Tajay Spears was, especially that last year. So I like Dean Connors.
Nate, may I ask for clarification on something? Because Slade Nagel was the offensive coordinator in 2023 when Mekhi Hughes was the number one back for Tulane. Tajay Spears was in 2022 when Slade Nagel was just the tight ends coach.
Okay. Well, either way.
I mean, Hughes is still pretty good. Like, let's not be unreal here, but.
Gotcha. That's a good point though. Yeah, I mean he was obviously on staff there, but he was not wasn't the one. Now I n oh, that's what it was. Yes. So because I did the coaching change article on Tulane when Slade Nagel took over. So yes, Slade Nagel, that's what it was. Slade Nagel was listed as the tight ends coach in 2022. That's the year that Tajay Spears went bananas, right?
Yes.
He was listed as a tight ends coach. He actually called plays that year, even though he didn't have the title as OC. Willie Fritz silent fired the other guy. Slade Nagel called plays after like game two that year. They
See,
had,
this is why I have you on, Nate. This is why
yeah.
you're just making me now fired up for this Slade Nagel hire
Yeah, I
even
remember doing the
more.
research. I remember doing the research on it because I was like, why are the beat reporters just like assuming nothing's going to change with the offense with Slade Nagel taking over as offensive coordinator here at Tulane? And then the more I dug into it, they were like, yeah, I forget what week it was. It was like week two or three. Tulane really sucked, and Willie Fritz just quiet fired the other guy, and made Slade Nagel the
So
OC.
that
So he's
makes
been there. He was there for 2 years as the actual play caller under Willie Fritz.
a lot more sense now, because I remember looking up, I think Joe Craddock is the name of the other guy, and I remember sitting there thinking, like, when Fritz hired Kevin Barbet, I'm like, this Joe Craddock guy that apparently was your OC in 2022, like, he was available, why didn't you just go with this guy? Well, now there's some clarification. The guy just sucks, and that's why he hasn't been employed since then either. That's because like he's not been hired by anybody else, at least according to Wikipedia.
Yeah,
So.
I don't remember who. I don't think it was Joe Craddock, but I don't remember who it was. But yeah, it's like it was a weird deal. He got quiet fired, and Slade Nagel took over,
Oh
and
no, Jim
Sabota,
Savoda. Yes, that's who
that's
I'm
who it
thinking of.
was.
Craddock
Yes,
is
yes,
the
yes, yes.
offensive coordinator there now.
Yeah, yeah,
Yes,
yeah,
Savoda.
yeah. It was Jim Sabota. Yeah, he got quiet canned, and Slade Nagel took over. So, but anyways, that's what has me kind of fired up about this option, about Houston being kind of a strong bounce back program this year. They sucked last year, and Kevin
Oh,
Barbet
yeah.
sucks as an offensive coordinator. I could see them, with Dean Connors coming over. He didn't have to go far, right? Rice is like 10 minutes away from Houston, so he probably lives in the same house.
Do you
And
probably
now
walk
he's
there?
now and now he's now he's got somebody at calling plays for him that did really, wonders with Tajay Spears and Mekhi Hughes. So I like him as a nice option this year. I don't have a whole lot of trust in the quarterback. What's his name from Texas A&M?
Gunnar Wiegman.
Wiegman. Yeah, I haven't, anytime you want to put faith in him, then you're going to be let down. So, but I really
I
like
mean,
Dean Connors as an option.
the system here is nice, right? Like in 2022, Michael Pratt finished as the quarterback 26 in fantasy points per game. I'm trying to remember what he finished as the year before. Let me see if I could pull that up real quick. Where are you, Mr. Pratt? Yeah, he finishes QB 31 the year before at Tulane,
Yeah,
right?
that's
Like
not bad.
Wiegman's got some dual threat ability to him. I think him stepping down to the Big 12 will help him out a
Sure.
lot. So
Yeah.
I think Wiegman's
This
a
is where he
solid.
needs to be,
I
right?
th I
He's not an
think
SEC quarterback.
no, he's not an SEC quarterback. I think this will be a really nice step for him. I think he's another guy that's a really good late round quarterback. That's the theme of this year, man. There's just so many good quarterbacks out there. That's why I tell people, I'm like, you don't have to spend up for quarterbacks this year in drafts.
They lost Manjack. Who are we expecting to be their wide receiver one?
So I have three names here for you. We got Marquise Shoulders to transfer from Tulsa. We got Amari Thomas coming over from UAB, and then you have Mekhi Mighty Mouse Muse.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's probably a good fit for Amari Thomas.
Yeah,
Like
he'll be fine, but
I think what I've seen from him skill-wise is is pretty good. So yeah, that could be a night. He could be a good bounce back candidate as well.
I would hold the horses on that just slightly, mostly due to the fact that I know for a fact in 2023, yes. Yeah, Chris Brazel led this team with 62 targets. And then in 2022, let's see. Yeah, Deuce Watts led the team with 47. So they spread the ball around a lot under Slade Nagel.
It's not a receiver. It's not a receiver room that I would invest anything more than just an absolute last round type flyer in.
Yeah, you invest in Amari Thomas if you think he is a guy that is going to force them to feed them the ball, which I personally don't think he's that. So.
You're probably right.
All right, Nate, we got a couple more minutes here. But again, I had honorable mentions just thrown here at the end of like other names that people one should spend some time in looking themselves. But Brian Hartline being promoted to offensive coordinator at Ohio State. Rob Ezell, the former offensive coordinator at South Alabama this past year, now the offensive coordinator at Wake Forest. Bill Belichick, head coach of the Patriots, now the head coach of North Carolina. Brian Harsin, now the offensive coordinator at Cal. Seth Dagey, the former offensive coordinator at Marshall, now the offensive coordinator at Arizona. Tino Sunseri, the co-offensive coordinator at Indiana last year, now on his own as the offensive coordinator at UCLA. And then your favorite, Jeff Grimes, the former offensive coordinator at Kansas and Baylor, now the offensive coordinator at Wisconsin. Do you have any quick thoughts on any of those guys that we just weren't able to fit with our 10 that we focused on?
Yeah, I think, well, like I said about Jeff Grimes, I think what's the Wisconsin's coach name? The head coach? I forget.
Luke Fickell.
Luke Fickell. Luke Fickell's trying to get himself fired right now. Like this is a get yourself fired kind of hire that he just made with Jeff Grimes. So Luke Fickell will be looking for a job soon.
Well, I said the same thing about the quarterbacks he brought in because his two quarterbacks were Billy Edwards and oh my God, why am I blanking on the San Diego State?
The San Diego State O'Neal.
O'Neal, Danny O'Neal. Like, those are the two quarterbacks he brought in, and I'm just like, those are I'm about to get fired quarterback draws out of the portal.
I can't believe Luke Fickell's made some of the decisions he's made. I love, and I am super curious to see how it goes at UCLA because I think Tino Sunseri is one of those coaches similar to like Mack Leftwich and Ben Arbuckle before he took over at Washington State, where like the coaching community thinks very, very highly of Tino Sunseri, and clearly that's a system that we have liked at Indiana and JMU. He's followed that staff each step of the way there. So I think that could be really interesting. His time at UCLA, I'm gonna kind of low key keep an eye on some of those players there in the pass game. And then I like the hire of Seth Dagey over at Arizona could be fairly interesting because it was a disaster last year. I don't know that roster is going to be good enough. I think that staff's just kind of struggling right now. But I think the combination of Dagey and Brennan could be fairly interesting. So I'll keep an eye on that one as well too.
I'm personally excited about the Rob Ezell hire going to Wake Forest. One, we've already seen Jake Dickert have pretty good like ideas of like what makes a good offensive coordinator with the Ben Arbuckle hire, right? So I'm hoping he strikes gold here again. Also, Rob Ezell comes from that same coaching tree of Major Applewhite and everything. Not Major Applewhite. Is Major Applewhite? Who's that?
Applewhite's it. I don't know where Rob Ezell was before South Alabama. Has he
He
like
was he
what's
was he was like an analyst for South Alabama, so he's been with them for a bit. So he kind of comes from that tree there, where again you take your best receiver, you place him all over the field. Carlos Hernandez, in my opinion, pretty clearly the best wide receiver there at Wake Forest right now, and so I'm hoping that investment I made in a long time ago finally pays off there with him being the focal point of that offense moving forward.
What do you think happens at QB there?
I'm
I feel
thinking.
like
I think Deshaun Purdy.
everybody has assumed Deshaun Purdy. And I remember like a year ago, everybody was like, well, Jeremy Heklinski is going to be incredible. And then I'm like, okay, well, now should
I would
not be
love.
his job.
I
Like, are we
love.
really gonna Purdy is going to be the guy that stops Heklinski from becoming the guy?
I mean, Purdy's got some decent upside. Like, just like again, when you look at the programs he was kind of visiting before. That were kind of willing to take shots, and I'm like, Florida and Georgia are not small programs, and they were bringing him in as a potential like high upside guy to add to their quarterback room, which sounds crazy because I agree with you. You look at his stats last year, and it doesn't really seem like that kind of, like, he doesn't really seem that kind of player. But as you kind of mentioned with some of the coaches and everything, like, sometimes you just got to read the tea leaves of if these programs are taking an extra look at him, might be something there.
Yeah,
I don't think it'll be Robbie Ashford. That just doesn't seem like that's ever going to happen.
Yeah, Robbie Ashford went there too.
I think, again, it's a new staff. Heck, Linsky is going to find out real quick if he's got a chance to ever start for this program or not. So I think we'll find out in the spring pretty quickly what's going to happen there.
Man, I tell you what, if Robbie Ashford transfers again just to sit the bench, like, you talk about one of the all-timers as far as a guy, you know, read the room and land somewhere to be like a big time contributor. Like, if that dude would have ever gone like down to the Sun Belt or the MAC or whatever, like, he could have just been a CFF monster. Instead, he just loves sitting the bench
and just jumping from room to room and just wondering why he's where he's at in life. So, all righty. With that being said, Nate, appreciate you coming on, man. This has been fun. Always great to talk coaching changes and systems with you and everything. You have your stock up, stock down articles out right now. What else are you kind of working on right now?
I got a few more that I'm kind of, you know, got an outline going for. I'll have the nuclear option article coming out here before too long. I did that one last year. It did okay last year. We'll try to hit, you know, maybe we'll hit a better nuclear switch this year. So, and then I'll, you know, eventually have the post spring stock up, stock down. But there'll be a few articles in between as the spring gets going. So,
speaking of the spring gets going, that's pretty much after we get done with these coaching changes. I'll be taking another week off because that's the week that I'm officially moving to my new house. So I'll need a break then. But then after that, it's full dive into whatever we can get our grubby little mitts on. In terms of spring camp, spring scrimmages, and then eventually spring games are less than a month away, pretty much. Although we'll see how many of those we still have by the time we get to the beginning of April. So, Nate, appreciate you. Everybody else, we've come to the end of our show. I thank you all for listening. If you have not already, do what I asked you to do before. Leave a like, a comment, and subscribe if you're watching this on YouTube. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show, leave a 5-star review where you can. Make sure you are checking out the rest of the Campus to Canton podcast network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game, including our newest show, Ballin' with My Bestie, with Chris K and Ethan Sowers. They are doing a phenomenal job getting you ready for those underdog best ball tournaments that'll be getting started in the summer. So go ahead and get on that early, and you will see some success later on this year. Until then, we'll see you guys back here next Monday when we cover the G5 coaching changes. Until then, appreciate you guys, and I hope you have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.